Alright, so let's talk about anemias, all anemias in common. Anytime you have anemia, you're going to have lowered what? Lowered number of red blood cells or lowered number or amount of hemoglobin. Now, what's the job of hemoglobin?
Carry oxygen.
So what is our body going to have problems doing? Carrying oxygen. Now, if you're having trouble carrying oxygen, what's the body response to that?
It's tired.
Okay, tired. You just feel tired. What about your ability to perform exercise or strenuous activity? Decreased. So we would call that either exercise intolerance or dyspnea on exertion. Now, the classic signs of anemia, there are four. How many?
Four.
So, you need to memorize these. Pallor. Person will be pale because they're not going to have as much, not as much red blood cells. So, less color in the blood, less color on the appearance, in the skin. Next one is fatigue. I'm just so tired. Next one is dyspnea on exertion. And then the last one is dizziness. Ooh, I feel lightheaded. So, what are the four? Alright, no matter what kind of anemia the person has, they're going to have these four classic signs if they have signs. Now, that brings us to another point. There's a saying in medicine and healthcare, treat the patient, not the number. What does that mean?
Each patient is different.
Every patient is different, and every patient will have a different presentation of the same illness. So sometimes you might have someone who has these symptoms quite badly, and their numbers aren't that bad. Or you might have another patient whose numbers are worse, but they don't have that many symptoms. Which patient is worse off? The one with the symptoms. So we treat the patient, not just the numbers, is how I like to say it. All right, now, the symptoms are going to depend on a couple things. One is the magnitude or the severity of the problem. A patient who's got a hemoglobin of 8 is going to be worse off than the person who's got a hemoglobin of 12, generally speaking. The other thing is the suddenness of the problem. If it comes on very quickly, did your body have time to compensate? No. So if it happens really quickly, the symptoms are typically going to be worse than if it happens over a long period of time, because the person will have a chance to compensate. So those are the two factors that are going to influence our manifestations. What are the classic signs? Okay, question?
What's an example of when it comes on
suddenly?
Like extreme blood loss?
Yeah, like extreme blood loss would be like a very, very quick one. The chillin' we're talking about here is a couple weeks versus years. Some people take years to go down or months to go down, or someone else might happen within a couple days, or in the case of bleeding, a couple minutes. All right, now, in addition to the classic signs, you're also going to have compensatory signs. How is your body going to react to not having enough oxygen? Okay. It's going to increase heart rate. What's going to increase the heart rate? What part of the nervous system is going to say increase heart rate?
Sympathetic.
So you're going to get sympathetic response. So what are the sympathetic responses? Increased heart rate, vasoconstriction, increased respiratory rate. So a person's going to have high heart rate, high blood pressure. They're going to become even more pale because they've got vasoconstriction. And they're going to have a high breathing rate. All of that is trying to compensate for the lack of the oxygen's ability to be able to get enough blood into, or enough oxygen into it.
So, it's
not
necessarily
going out, metabolic alkalosis.
So, it's not compensating.
No, what I'm saying is if you're breathing more, if anything, your carbon dioxide level is going down, so you have respiratory alkalosis.
Okay.
But at the same time, what's happening to your cells? If your cells don't get enough oxygen, what are they doing now? In addition to producing oxygen, they're also needing to burn glucose some way, anaerobically. And what's the byproduct of that? Lactic acid. So you might have a buildup of acid from that. So again, the breathing faster might also be compensatory for having increased lactic acid levels. So if anything, your pH is probably going to stay the same, maybe go down a little. I mean, carbon dioxide levels will either stay the same or go down. Another day. Now, some other things. Your kidneys are going to start holding on to water as well. Because when your body says, hey, not enough oxygen, the first thing it thinks is we don't have enough blood. Now, it's true, we don't have enough blood, but it's not the water part that's the problem, it's the hemoglobin. So your body doesn't know that. So it's going to do the only thing it knows how to do, and it's going to start increasing water retention as well. What's that going to do to blood pressure? Make it go up. And they're also going to get salt and water retention. All right, now let's talk about the different types of anemia in turn. So again, we classify them by their morphology. So we're going to talk about them in order of morphology. So before we go into this, let me draw them on the board for a moment, and then we'll go over each one. All right, so anemia is by morphology. The first one we have is macrocytic. Macrocytics can be in combination with either hyperchromic or normochromic. Really, the important thing is that it's macrocytic. Under macrocytic, we're going to have two types. Folate deficiency and B12 deficiency. Now, there's another name for B12 deficiency anemia, and that's pernicious. Say pernicious. Then we have what we call the microcytic hypochromic. And there's two causes here. There's a series of metabolic problems that include thalassemia, which is a genetic disorder. And then the big one, though, is iron deficiency. Yeah. Iron deficiency is the most common of the microcytics. The other one's not so common. The name for these is sideroblastic anemias, if you are really interested. We're not going to talk about them at all, except to say that thalassemia is one of them. Then we have what we call the normos. Normocytic, normochromic. And there's four. So the first one is aplastic anemia. Second one is post-hemorrhagic. The next one is hemolytic. And the last one is anemia of chronic disease. All right, so here are our eight anemias, broken down into three categories. So we're going to talk about each one of them in turn. And today we're only going to have time to talk about the macrocytics. So tomorrow we'll finish it up, and then move on to, I think we're going to do clotting before we do cancer. It's just going to be easier to do it that way. Now, the other thing that I want you to do is, knowing this breakdown, you can begin to do the blood count worksheet that I've given you, because what you can do is you can classify them as, you can go through and say, this is high, this is low, this is high, this is low. You'll be able to classify the patient as macrocytic, microcytic, or normochromic, and then from there, you should be able to say, well, if it's macrocytic, it's going to be one of these two anemias. If it's microcytic, it's one of these two. And if it's normochromic, it's one of these. And then as we go through it, we'll tell you how to, you can tell a little bit even more as we go through the rest of it. All right, so let's talk about macrocytic for a moment. Macrocytics are sometimes called megaloblastic Mega meaning big, blast meaning cell type. So it's a big cell. Pernicious anemia is caused by B12 deficiency. It is fatal if untreated. Repeat after me. Fatal if untreated. Now, in addition to the anemias, what are the more classic signs and symptoms of anemia? Okay, so power fatigue, dyspnea, exertion, and dizziness. In addition to those four things, the patient will also have neurological problems. What neurological problems do we talk about in particular? Start with P. Paresthesias. Alright. The etiology is B12, lack of B12 absorption. Now, what are the two major causes of the loss of B12 absorption? Either a person just isn't putting it into their mouth, or they're putting it in their mouth, but it's not being absorbed. So those are the two major issues. Decreased intake, people who don't eat animal products are the ones who are most likely to get this, because it's in almost every animal product. If a person eats meat or animal product, chances are they're going to get enough B12. So who's the most at risk for not putting it in their mouth? Vegans, strict vegetarians, or people who just have total malnutrition. And again, it's stored in the liver for 3 to 5 years. Now, on the other hand, if a person is putting it in their mouth normally, but they're not absorbing it, here are some of the possible reasons. Congenital. A person was born without producing enough intrinsic factor. Partial or complete gastric bypass. So someone who's had stomach stapling, whether it's because they were just overweight and wanted to use that as a technique to lose weight, or if they had maybe a stomach cancer and part of their stomach was removed. Either way, removing part of the stomach can cause decreased intrinsic factor production and cause B12 deficiency. Autoimmune gastric atrophy. This is a problem where immune system starts eating its own stomach. And then chronic atrophic gastritis. This is where your stomach actually begins to shrink because of irritants or toxins. So heavy alcohol consumption is a big one. Alcoholics are at extreme risk for B12 deficiency and other vitamin problems because their stomach lining just starts shrinking because of constant toxins. Too much hot tea. Smoking. And it's more common in elderly than it is in any other age group.
Hot tea.
Well, the heat plus tea has tannins in it. And the two together can cause damage over time. This isn't just like someone who has tea once a day or twice a day. This is like people have a lot of hot tea.
How about like hot coffee?
Coffee, not so much, apparently. Woohoo! Finally, those tea drinkers get it. So, classic signs of anemia, what are they? Okay, in addition to that, neurological manifestations. So, paresthesias, ataxia, what's ataxia? Can't walk in a coordinated fashion. Loss of position and vibration sense. Hey, you guys know how to do that. Show me how you do position sense. You guys are killing me. You guys are killing me. What's this a test of? Cerebellar function. Does this ring a bell? Is it up or is it down? Position sense. Where your body is positioned. It's a good thing we delayed that neuro, huh? And spasticity. What is spasticity? Spasm. So muscle spasm, muscle cramping, very painful. In addition to that, they also get a sore, beefy red tongue. Like, pop a toe up or a mouth, and They can be wet. Hyperbilirubinemia, they'll begin to break down these abnormal blood cells too quickly, so they can begin to get more bilirubin buildup and can become jaundiced. And then hepatosplenomegaly, their liver and spleen can get enlarged because they get bigger as they destroy all of these abnormal red blood cells. Again, fatal if untreated. So evaluation. Now, this evaluation is specific to red blood cells or to B12, but there's going to be a lot in common over all of these different things. So the first one is CBC analysis. In order to know that they've got anemia in the first place, what do we do? What do we check? Okay, blood levels. What blood levels? Say the first triplet. And what is the first triplet? Red blood cells, hemoglobin, hematocrit. Now, technically speaking, hemoglobin is a reduction of hemoglobin or red blood cells. For our purposes, we're going to say if two of the labs are abnormal, it's going to be anemia. In real life, what they usually go by is hematocrit to decide should we treat this aggressively or not. But again, you can't use hematocrit by itself. It needs to be in combination with the other two. So for our purposes, we're going to look at red blood cell, hemoglobin, hematocrit. If two of them are low, we're going to call it anemia. We're going to look at the clinical manifestations. Does this patient have the four classic symptoms? Do they have neurological symptoms? We're going to take B12 levels. If B12 levels are low, guess what it is? Oh, I got it. B12 deficiency. We can do something called a Schilling test. Now, a Schilling test is an absorption of B12 test. What we're going to do is we're going to administer radioactive. Why would we want to give someone radioactive B12? Isn't that just, that's like mean. Oh, it's a nuclear medicine test. So what we're going to do is we're going to administer radioactive B12, and we're going to see if it gets absorbed or not. And that's going to tell us whether the person is producing enough intrinsic factor or is having another kind of absorption problem. We can also measure intrinsic factor level. And this is an extreme last measure. You can actually take bone marrow aspirate. Now, say painful.
Painful.
No, you didn't say it right. Painful.
Painful.
All right. Now, especially in the old days, they used to not use any anesthesia on these poor patients. And they take this big honking needle and stab it into your bone. Penetrate the bone and then suck out some of your bone marrow.
Yeah. I'd like
that. So, never let someone do it to your patient without giving them adequate anesthesia first. Now, once it's been done, what's the patient in extreme risk for? Okay, well, infection and bleeding. So typically, they're going to do it in the hip. Because it's a nice big bone and it's relatively close to the surface, and it's safer than taking it from the skull or the sternum, and it's not as sensitive as the sternum. Sternum's really sensitive. So you usually do it from the hip. So what do you have the patient do after they've gotten their bone marrow aspirate? Lay on their side, which side? The opposite. Pressure. So you have them lay on the side. And that's the other reason they do it in the hip. It's a lot harder to lay on your head or on your sternum. So, they lay on the side, they took it from to apply pressure to stop the bleeding. Again, this isn't as common. Usually here what you're looking for is to see if they're having bone marrow suppression or if they maybe have some kind of cancer in the bone. Treatment. What do you think the treatment is? This is a tough one. Give B12. Gosh, that was easy. Now, B12 can be given one of two ways, injection or oral. Say injection or oral. Now, the book will tell you that the preferred method is oral. Why would the preferred method be oral? Say again. Less invasive, no risk for infection, cheap. The patient can take it themselves. Now, if a person has lowered intrinsic factor, can they still take it orally?
No.
Yes.
Yes, you just need to give them higher doses.
Plus absorptions.
Now, all of that said, in real life, it's almost always going to be injection. Because it works a little bit better, and we can make sure the patient is definitely taking it. Usually what they'll do is they'll come in once a month to get their injection. And the other thing is it makes them feel better like that. So patients love it because it's like, I just feel better now. You know, sometimes I'll have patients who come in feeling fatigued. They don't have B12 deficiency, but they have a friend who did. Can I just have a B12 shot? Because they think it's going to make them feel so much better. So in real life, injection is almost always the way you're going to see this be treated. But again, dietary and oral is the best way to do it if possible. In severe cases, you're going to transfuse blood to help them survive, and then you're going to correct. You want to monitor the reticulocyte, because what's the first number to go up when your body's producing new red blood cells? Reticulocytes. All right, so let's talk B12, and then we'll be done. B12 is called cyanocobalamin. Don't ask me why, that's just the name. And cyan would imply that it would look blue, right? But guess what color it is? It's red. So it's this little red vial, and oral says it is preferred, but again, in real life, it's most likely going to be given injection. It can be given intranasally, IM, and subcutaneously. Typically, it's going to be given intramuscularly, is how I've usually seen it given. The adverse effects, it can cause hypokalemia. Oral doses range from 1,000 to 10,000 micrograms per day to treat it, and then once it's under control, 6 micrograms per day dietary supplement. IM, or sub-Q, is typically going to be 30 micrograms per day for 5 to 10 days, and then 100 to 200 micrograms per month, once per month. Intranasal is 500 micrograms, sniffed once a week. I've never seen anyone on this, but you may one day, I don't know. The most common one that I see is IM. It's also good for the doctor's office because the patient comes in to get their shot and they can bill the insurance for giving them the shot. All right, considerations. Monitor the B12 levels. We want them to become normal. Monitor the hemogram. Hemogram stands for hemoglobin and hematocrit, or complete blood count. If you ever hear the term H&H, what does that stand for? Hemoglobin and hematocrit. Give folic acid with B12 for severe. And then finally, we have a folic acid caution. Now, I'm going to have to draw on the board for just a moment. What? Yes, it is. Now, as it turns out, B12 does neuro things, and then it also does blood things in email. Now, the way it works in doing the blood is by enhancing folic acid, or folate. So, if a person takes excess folate, what they can do is they can cure the blood part. But guess what won't be cured? The neuro part. So the problem is, if a person has an anemia and they want to self-treat, I just heard I can get some over-the-counter folic acid and I'll feel better. Well, yeah, if they take enough folic acid, it will cure their anemia. But it won't cure the neuro, and they can still die from the neuro problems. So that's the folic acid warning. But in severe cases, you're going to give B12 and folic acid together, even if their folic acid levels are normal, because it'll help enhance the action of the B12.
So what cures the
neuro? B12 is what cures the neuro part.
Oh, okay. So you want to give the B12 something that helps.
Right. Right, but if the anemia is very severe, rather than just give B12, we give both. So giving folic acid in and of itself doesn't hurt, but if you give it by itself without fixing the B12, you'll mask the problem, because you'll fix the anemia but not the neuro. That's the warning. All right, any questions about B12 or B12 deficiency? So on the test, oral is technically preferred, but in real life, chances are you're going to get it intramuscular. All right, that's it.